Hello, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to the UBS Global Research Pod Hub, a channel that shares insights from economists, strategists, and equity analysts on the pivotal questions and events shaping today's markets. My name's Paul Schneider, Global Macro Product Manager at UBS, and I'm delighted today to be joined by Vicky Kaub, Global Head of ESG and Sustainability Research here at UBS. Today's podcast is focused on data centers. Now, taking a step back, AI has been a major driver of market performance in 2025, driven in part by the US. Underlying that is the importance of data centers as the bedrock for storage that we'll need to fuel the AI growth and productivity that the global economy is focused on. However, data centers themselves are a hot topic, from the capacity that they require, the storage that is needed, and the operational constraints that they provide. So that begs the question to kick off today's podcast for Vicky: what does it take to turn a data center on?
Thanks, Paul. In our team, we're less concerned with, let's say, AI adoption rate forecasts. We're looking on just the basis that that's a very large number. And we're much more concerned about whether you can actually turn the data center on in the first place, because that gets into some very, very important sustainability considerations that we deal with around whether that's power systems, changes in power systems, stability of power systems, and of course, what generation sources are we actually talking about? And within that, our view is that whether or not decarbonization is anyone's intended goal, you may be moving in that direction because you now have to, as a combination of factors that are needed to, as I said, turn these data centers on in the first place. So the first, power deficit. US electricity growth has been flat-ish over the last decade or decade plus. It's now moving in the range of 3% growth per year, which doesn't sound like a big number, but in this market is huge. Alongside that, you're looking for any source of power to turn that data center on, but in that constraint that you have where there is so much demand for it. In terms of what generation sources people are looking for, solar is actually something that's becoming very, very popular as a discussion point because it's cheap and it's fast. And those are important considerations in a scenario where, again, you need to turn the data center on, but power capacity is constrained and the infrastructure to deliver new electricity generation capacity takes a very, very long time. In terms of, again, bringing it back to sustainability for a minute, large power users in the US are still contracting for green power. It's difficult for me to say with any certainty whether that's because they have strong views on decarbonization or is it because green power is what they can actually get cheaper and faster. And then there's another constraint around the cost that's worth thinking about. If I give you an example, in 2023, building a combined cycle gas plant was, we think, in the range of $900 per kilowatt hour. That moved to more like $2,400 per kilowatt hour in the first half of 2025 and is continuing to move upwards at quite a steady clip. That type of calculation, in addition to the fact that it's slow to get the infrastructure in the first place, changes a lot of thinking around what kind of power you want or can get in the mix. And in any event, if you want a combined cycle gas turbine now, it's on a 5-year plus backlog. Again, there's a similar story for a lot of other electricity infrastructure. The wait time for components is in years.
You mentioned quite a few factors in that initial response. What about water and the constraints that brings?
Water's another one we've been paying quite close attention to, because if I was to identify two significant operational constraints that relate to sustainability in getting data centers up and running. One is power, which we've discussed. Another is water. And water is becoming an increasing pain point, whether it's from a permitting perspective, a water stress perspective, in all manner of areas, where it is something that people really have to start thinking about. So if I look at the water use for data centers, generally speaking, the majority of the water use directly is in cooling systems. However, both conventional and hyperscaler data centers are being built in or already exist in areas of very high water stress. That is one factor. The other factor is that newer chips are simply too powerful in some cases to be used with conventional cooling systems. So all of those things together mean that with water constraint as a starting point, you start to have to be thinking about novel solutions to this problem. But again, I would come back to sometimes water is a key issue that you need to think about in terms of whether or not you can build this thing in the first place.
So clearly there are a number of constraints that we have to think about when we look at how data centers are turned on. Why, I guess, is the energy transition so fundamental to the AI build out or rollout that we're seeing?
I think it's so fundamental because you have to be thinking in a tight capacity situation where you have to have a lot of power. You have to be thinking about what that power looks like. And energy transition is a key part of that because a lot of these solutions are not the same types of power generation or distribution and transmission that we had before. As I mentioned before, in some cases that might be because a greener power source is cheaper and more readily or faster available. And that can mean that you have a very strong signal to the market in terms of investing in, for example, solar or solar plus battery. The other thing that we would be talking about quite a lot in this circumstance or the situation is nuclear. Because nuclear energy, if you're looking at the types of power that are required, both in general for system stability, but also in terms of very significant total amounts of power, nuclear is actually a very high quality solution and one that the tech industry in particular is very interested in.
So how can AI accelerate the energy transition?
I think, again, you're looking at an industry, and I say when I say industry, I mean the tech industry, that has an urgent commercial imperative to keep the lights on. That means they're extremely incentivized to be looking for solutions to this power problem. Those solutions can quite often take the forms of greener power sources. And because the industry is so incentivized to deliver a lot of power, that means funding or development for these power sources. So we talked about solar. Solar is relatively less complicated. It's quicker to deliver. I think it's generally well understood. But again, one of the areas that we've been looking at very closely is nuclear, because in our opinion, nuclear is one of the highest quality solutions to a power problem for several reasons, which I'll get into in a minute. But it's also extremely expensive and slow to build. So what we have seen recently is quite a lot of activity on the part of the tech industry, also the U.S. administration, in policy changes, in funding, in deals, all sorts of activity that is pushing nuclear development. But if I just go back for a minute to why we think nuclear is a quality solution to this problem, there's a whole compounding mix of factors, starting with it's very power dense with very high utilization rates. So you get the highest output from nuclear compared to any other unit of installed power generation, and conventional size nuclear facilities provide a massive amount of power. That also means you don't need as big a footprint to produce the same amount of power versus other sources. Also, very importantly, it provides stable baseload power, meaning it is on all the time. That compares to renewables, which are intermittent. And also, because of the way it behaves, it acts as a stabilizing force for the grid. So while we also view, of course, renewables very positively, if you're putting a lot of renewables into the mix, you need to bolster the grid and or have sufficient long-duration energy storage when you get to a high enough renewables mix in the grid. Now, the other thing to look at is there are definitely geopolitical considerations to take into account with the fuel supply, but reactors hold a lot of fuel inventory on site, and typically nuclear is viewed as an energy security solution, and certainly more favorably so in this context than fossil sources. Nuclear also has an up to an 80-year or possibly even higher lifespan. It's low to no emissions, and nuclear facilities offer very good jobs for the local community over a period of decades, and constructing a facility does tend to use a lot of local content. Also, pollution considerations are vastly lower than conventional fossil generation sources, especially coal. But if I just sort of put all that together and repeat a little bit of what I said before, but just to draw some conclusions, in your question on how AI can accelerate the energy transition, you've got an industry in tech that has a very large wallet. and as I mentioned, a commercial imperative to keep the lights on, so to speak. Nuclear is viewed as a very compelling solution to powering those data centers. There have been a lot of tech deals in nuclear. The U.S. administration also views nuclear very positively and has made multiple supportive policy statements. That includes energy dominance in general, but also strength in AI. And again, remembering, in order to have a compelling proposition in AI, you have to have enormous amounts of power.
So in that sense, the power challenge combined with the nuclear potential opportunity provides us with a potential solution.
I would think so, yes.
I guess from an investment point of view and thinking about investor portfolios, it's not straightforward to think about how you might be invested here. How might an investor think about alternative ways to seek exposure?
If you can't buy nuclear, there's various reasons why investors may not be able to participate in nuclear. Some investors have exclusion policies. Sometimes it's just not that easy to find, let's say, conventional listed equity exposure. The other area of energy transition that we've been focused on very closely is grids. Everything we've talked about also requires a very stable and functioning grid system. And in terms of the investment opportunities in grids, there's a few angles that we look at that are a very compelling CapEx cycle, an investment cycle in general. One is that, particularly in the US and Europe, grids are very old. You're talking between 40 to 60 years for a lot of the components. That is end of usable life. They're starting to fail. You have a very strong replacement cycle here. Another is that you have to expand the grid to deal with all of this electrification, this data center demand. All of this requires more capacity in the grid. So that's an additional investment angle. There's also a lot of, let's say, amendments or bolstering of the grid that needs to happen when you have differentiated power sources. If you think about renewables, for example, it's not necessarily one giant facility that goes piped straight into the grid. You've got different locations. You have different types of sources. You have a lot more just numbers of generation sources in the mix, and you have to adjust for that. And then the final thing I would say, and this came through very clearly in a couple of years ago, the EU put out a proposal or a plan on investments that they thought would be required for the grid. And there was quite a significant amount of commentary in there about security in general, just bolstering security of the grid network. So that's also very important.
Any other angles we should be thinking about as we conclude?
I think a couple other areas that you might want to be considering are energy storage, which is extremely important to be looking at. Again, as you have greater demand for power, as you get more renewables into the mix, you do need storage. Novel sources of power generation. So we've, for example, we've done quite a lot of bit of work on geothermal and new technologies in geothermal. And then just generically anything that gets you to power generation, but can you deliver that capacity, I think is a key question that we keep asking.
Vicky, thank you very much for coming on today. Much appreciated. Clearly, the AI and technological challenges that we're seeing right now, the importance of data centers within the equation, and the way in which those data centers can be both built and in fact the energy will be required to fuel them is a massive topic for the market. It has been in 2025, and that's unlikely to change as we move into 2026. Thank you once again for joining us and representing our ESG team and its work. To our listeners, thank you for visiting the UBS Research Pod Hub. This was an overview of AI, data centers, and our thoughts from a sustainability perspective with myself, Paul Schneider, the Macro Product Manager, and with Vicky Kaub, Head of ESG and Sustainability at UBS. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do tune in again and share this episode with friends and colleagues. Thank you for joining us.
This content has been prepared by UBS AG, its subsidiaries and/or affiliates, and is purely informational in nature. It is not investment research and does not contain an investment recommendation, nor investment or professional advice. It is not an offer or solicitation to engage in any investment activity, and you should seek your own financial, tax, and legal advice before engaging in any such activity. UBS has no responsibility to you in relation to this content and has no regard to your personal circumstances or investment objectives, and receiving it does not imply any form of client relationship with UBS for any legal, regulatory, or tax purpose. This content is not intended for distribution into any jurisdiction, where to do so would be contrary to law or regulation. UBS does not accept any liability over the content of such material or reliance upon any information contained herein. The views and opinions expressed by any guest speaker or third party are not those of UBS. Accordingly, UBS does not accept liability over any such views and opinions expressed by such persons. This content is the valuable intellectual property of UBS, and UBS specifically prohibits the redistribution of it in whole or in part without its prior written permission. UBS 2025. The key symbol and UBS are among the registered and unregistered trademarks of UBS. All rights reserved.